Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Canto 5, Chapter 6, The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev, text number 1. It's prose. And I'll just read the word for word. Raja Uchu Uvacha. King Parikshit inquired. Na, not, nunam, indeed, Bhagava, O most powerful Shukadeva Goswami, Atmaramanam, a pure devotees, simply engaged in devotional service, Yoga Samirita, achieved by practice of yoga, Jnana, by knowledge. Avabharjita, burned. Karma bijanam, of those who seize the fruit of activities. Of those who seeds a fruit of activities. Doesn't make any sense in English, but anyhow. Aishvaryani, the mystic powers. Punaha, again. Kleshadyani, sources of distress. Bhavitum, to become. Arhanti, are able. Yadrichaya, automatically, upagatani, achieved. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is obtained by the practice of bhakti yoga. An attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Maharaj Rishabhdev neglect them? Please repeat. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is obtained by the practice of bhakti yoga. An attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhdev neglect them? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Pure devotees constantly engage in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is necessary for the discharge of devotional service is automatically attained, though it may appear to be the result of mystic yoga power. Sometimes the yogi displays a little yogic power by manufacturing gold. A little quantity of gold captivates foolish people, and thus the yogi gets many followers who are willing to accept such a tiny person as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a yogi may also advertise himself as Bhagavan. However, a devotee does not have to exhibit such magical wonders. Without practicing the mystic yoga process, he achieves even greater opulence all over the world. Under the circumstances, Lord Rishabhdev refused to manifest mystic yoga perfections. Maharaj Parikshit asked why he did not accept them, since for a devotee, they are not at all disturbing. The devotee is never distressed or satisfied by material opulence. His concern is how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If by the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee achieves extraordinary opulence, utilizes the opportunity for the Lord's service. He is not disturbed by the opulence. So the text again. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is obtained by the practice of bhakti yoga. An attachment for fruitive activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhdev neglect them?" Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhinamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paska Dhyade Satarne. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has repeatedly explained that we're actually not the doer of the activities that are carried out by the material nature. For instance, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahankara Vimudatma Kartaham Itimanyate. Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahankara Vimudatma Kartaham Itimanyate. The bewildered spirit soul, and we're the bewildered spirit souls, under the influence of the three modes of nature, that's what's why we're bewildered. We're being influenced by the three modes of nature. Think themselves to be the doer of activities. Anyone ever have that misconception here? Thinking themselves they're doing something in the material world? And when I move my, it's my hand and I'm moving it. Just see how my prowess, how nicely I move my hand. Take a photo. Send it to my Facebook page. Which is all due to ahankar. Not due to ahankar, but our identification with the material energy is due to our false ego. And therefore we're called vimudatma. Muda means a fool. But we're not just ordinary fools, we're vimuda. We're super fools. Of course, we cannot artificially or just by intelligence understand everything clearly. We can understand things theoretically, and with intelligence we get some insight. But even after the use of our intelligence, if it doesn't illuminate our existence completely, that's because we don't have very much intelligence. If we had very much intelligence, we'd see things as they are, but because our intelligence is not very much, therefore we don't really see things properly. So what's the solution? Generally we take the solution, well, I should just lament. That's a good solution. Why don't we just cry? And if we cry together, it's even nicer. Or we just forget about it. It's too difficult, Krishna God, and might as well live a nice illusion rather than a bad illusion. I may be an illusion, but I eat nice prasadam in the illusion. So everything's cool. Everything's all right. Now the idea is that we're supposed to strengthen our intelligence. And the first thing is to find out that we have to strengthen our intelligence. And what does it mean to strengthen our intelligence? Do crossword puzzles? Memorize dictionaries? No, strengthen our intelligence means to utilize our intelligence to connect with Krishna. Because we're not trying to strengthen our intelligence by acquiring more material or even theoretical spiritual knowledge. We're trying to strengthen our intelligence by becoming Krishna conscious, because our intelligence is covered. It may be a lot of intelligence, a lot of covered intelligence. In the mode of goodness, we have a lot of intelligence, but it's also covered. In the mode of ignorance, we have no intelligence, and it's very much covered. So we're not just trying to add more knowledge so we can build a better mousetrap. We're trying to purify our consciousness, purify our intelligence, purify our mind and senses, So we perceive our eternality. We perceive Krishna. That's real intelligence. That's actually seeing things properly. It is said, naiva kinchit karomiti yukta manyate tatvavit pashan shrinvan shrishan jigran ashnanga chan svapan svasan prajalpan vishvijan grinanam vishanam vishanapi inriyarandiyarteshu vartanta iti daryan. Naiva kinchit karomiti. Now, at no time does a self-realized soul think he's doing anything. Naiva kinchit karomiti. Yukta manyate. Because his consciousness is in Krishna consciousness. It is not by the development of book knowledge that one can see things properly. It's by focusing the mind and giving the love to Krishna. As Krishna reveals himself, Gyanena tutara gyanam, yesham nashitam atmanaha, tesham adityavaj gyanam, prakashiti tatvaram. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nations is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So the knowledge that we're a Krishna servant is the knowledge that illuminates everything. The more we act as Krishna's servant, then the more we become illuminated with knowledge. Smarta vyaksadatam vishnora vismartak jatuna kinchit sarva vidi nisedyasyora etiyar eva kundiya. That couldn't be right. Smarta vyaksadatam vishnora vismartak jatuna kinchit sarva vidi nisedyasyora etiva eva kinkara. Kinkara. Kinkara means servant. So all the rules and regulations are all meant to help us always remember Krishna and never forget him. The vidis, what we're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to be doing, and the nishtas, what we're not supposed to be doing, they're all servants to that one rule and that one regulation. Always remember Krishna and never forget him. And that's done if we're always in the mood of trying to serve him under the guidance of his representatives. Then we'll see things properly. And for one who sees things properly, one whose knowledge of the absolute truth, or is naiva kinchit karomiti, one who's naiva, not at any time, kinchit karomiti, am I doing anything, yukta manyata tatvavit, one who's actually knowledge of the absolute, who's connected through devotional service, knows that while he's seeing and hearing and smelling and touching, while breathing and sleep, dreaming, always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because while evacuating and receiving, opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he's aloof from them. So even we get all mystic power, what to speak of our tiny little power, if we can jump one inch beyond someone else, we're very proud. We want it on video to be preserved for our descendants. So in the sibling succession, they'll see who the actual truth in the family was. If we can memorize a verse, then we think we're practically on the same level as Bhagavan. He knows everything, and we almost know everything. But one who's actually knowledge, they see that whatever we're able to accomplish in this material world is not due to our prowess. It's due to Krishna manifesting that through either his spiritual or his material energy. And of course, we have a part to play. It's not that we're an innocent victim, or it's all random and chance what's happening. It's according to our desire. When our desires are connected with Krishna, then Krishna is able to, quote, empower us to be a better instrument. And when our desires are connected with the mode of ignorance or passion or even goodness, then Krishna has a very limited ability to empower us. Empower us doesn't exactly mean us. It means that this body, which is an instrument for either the material or the spiritual energy, simply becomes active either materially or spiritually, according to what we desire. Of course, if it's we desire material things, then we have to experience the body acting in a material way, or the mind, or the intelligence, or our senses. And if we desire spiritually, then we experience the body acting spiritually in service to Krishna. So that's simply our choice. That's all the choice we have is. It's not we have unlimited choices. No, we only have a choice. Either we can agree to follow Krishna's instructions, find out what Krishna wants us to do under different time, place, and circumstances, or we can neglect that and simply follow the ways of the modes of nature that we're already conditioned by, which will direct us moment to moment in our activities, in our desires. So that's our choice. Now, someone like Maharaj Vrishabhdev, he was perfectly situated in devotional service. Therefore, Krishna could utilize him perfectly, utilize his body, his mind and words in any way necessary. All mystic power becomes almost as powerful as Bhagavan, because one becomes the body, the mind, the words become an instrument for Bhagavan, for Krishna. And he infuses the body, the mind, the words with spiritual energy. And with that spiritual energy, of course, the soul is also awakened. But one can be infused with such energy just by properly following Krishna's directions and still not be Krishna conscious, still thinking oneself to be one of the super soul. In the 11th canto, it explains that the development of mystic power means when we dovetail our mind with that of the super soul. That's all. If we dovetail our minds with the super soul in relationship to the earth, then we get mahima. We can become as heavy as the earth because we dovetail our consciousness with that of the super soul in relationship to the earth. How that works practically is like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was a boy 5 years old, and he was sitting on the lap of his father, and his stepmother told him to get lost. And he was so powerless, he had to get off the lap of his father. He was just an ordinary 5-year-old boy. But then, after hearing instructions from his mother, being greatly distressed, he went into the forest, and there, following Narada Muni's instructions, he engaged in devotional service to Lord Vishnu, building a deity made out of mud. And he chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and he offered whatever leaves he had to Krishna. He offered the water and even the breath of air he took. And when he stopped breathing, he stopped the offerings. In any case, when he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then he became as powerful as Vishnu. When he put his little toe on the ground, the whole earth caved in. When he stopped breathing, the whole universe began suffocating, because his body was acting just like Vishnu. We are flying in an airplane. Ordinarily, if we try to run, we can only run so many kilometers an hour. But if we get inside an airplane and we become one with the airplane by traveling in it, then we can fly many thousands, hundreds of miles an hour because of our oneness with the airplane. So similarly, when our consciousness becomes one with Krishna, then the activities of this body, Krishna can utilize them spiritually as his instrument, and they become as powerful as Krishna. When Vishnu Jaya Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura is saying, "Now I am going away, my work done unfinished." So what did he mean by that, Vishnu Jaya Maharaj asked Prabhupada? So Prabhupada was saying that actually Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he's a Vaishnava. He could have finished his work because he's all powerful. But he decided to leave something for us to do. So that's the general idea. Of course, Krishna could do everything, but he's giving us something to do in devotional service. Otherwise, if Krishna had already saved everyone except for us, what would we do? Therefore, nimitra matram bhavasavasachin. Krishna tells Arjuna, he strikes fear into Arjuna's heart, as any preacher would do. He's preaching to Arjuna, so the first thing he does is strike fear in his heart. So, sannyasis, they generally follow Krishna's example. First, strike people fear into people's heart. You're gonna die. That's what Krishna said. Arjuna asked him, Akyaki me ko bhavan ugrupo namostate deva varaprasida vigyatami chami vantamadyam ihi prajanami tava pravritim. Arjuna was seeing the whole universal form and is wondering, what is this all about? What's the purpose? He didn't think that Krishna, he was a nice person, and one day he woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and this is the mood he was displaying. And a few unfortunate souls got thrown into that mood, and here we are now, called the universal form. He wanted to know, Pravritim, what is the whole purpose? Why did you manifest this? So Krishna didn't say, well, I had a bad day, I'm sorry, I'll try and do better tomorrow. He didn't say, well, you know, everyone needs a little bit of fun once in a while. Or whatever else he could have said to pacify Arjuna. No, he said, Kalosmi Shayakrit Pravrido, Lokansa Maharatamiha Praritak, Itepi Tvam Nabi Vishanti Sarve, Ye Vastita Pratnyukesh Yoda. Time I am, the destroyer of all the worlds. And I've come here to engage everyone. Except for you, the five Pandavas, all the soldiers on both sides here will be slain. So Krishna says, what is this world about? It's about time. This is how Krishna has manifested himself in the material world, personally. The energies are all Krishna's, but he's erecting everything through time. And time is changing everything. And what is it doing? It's destroying everything. And the ultimate destruction is called death. So every moment, whatever body we have is being destroyed. We may think it's growing, but Prabhupada explains it's not growing, it's changing. If we have a photograph, one photo, nothing happens. But if you add the photos one after another, you display them one after another quick enough, it appears that some activity is going on. They call that a movie. But actually, it's just all one photograph after another. There's nothing really going on. It just appears that it's going on because the photographs are changing so rapidly that we think it's continuous movement. Similarly, the material nature is being manifested one after another, the different forms, and they're going so quickly that we think that everything is moving or changing or growing or whatever. But actually, it's just one picture after another being displayed, like in a movie. So one who understands that, he understands that there's a certain slides that are already programmed called karma, and the karma is that everything is appears to be young at some time, and then it'll grow old, and then it'll become diminished, and then it'll dwindle, and then it'll disappear. That's the material energy. And then the soul will get another movie, drama to go through. So what's the solution? Everything is going to die. That's what Krishna says. The one thing everyone's trying to avoid, the one thing people don't like to hear. For instance, if we talked about how wonderful Radha and Krishna were and how nice Prasadam is and everything. But when we mention death, immediately it strikes our heart. Why is this person so negative? did he get off up on the wrong side of the bed? Or maybe he just likes it, this ghastly humor, this ghastly mellow. No, Krishna, that's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is not really trying to flatter us. No, he's saying this world, everyone dies. And actually, in this world, nothing was ever alive. It just appears to be alive, only due to the presence of the soul who doesn't die. So what's the solution? There is no solution. There's no solution to the material nature. No one is going to solve the material problems. Haranyakashipu couldn't do it after going through austerity for 120 years of the demigods. So what kind of austerity we're going to do? Fast every Ekadasi? That's not going to solve all the problems of material existence. No, Krishna says, Tasmat Twamutishi Shalabhasva Jitva Shatrum Bhukshvara Jansramidam Mayavata Niyatam Purvameva Mimitra Matram Bhavasava Sachin. Get up! Not yet, but get up! I'm just repeating what Krishna said. Get up and prepare to fight and conquer your enemies. They're defeated by my arrangement. Get up and prepare to fight and conquer your enemy. Win a flourishing kingdom. They're already defeated by my arrangement, and you, O Savasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. So, to become an instrument for Krishna, that's all Krishna is expecting. He's not expecting us to solve all the world's problems. We're not going to stop the war in Syria. Because people have to get their karmic reactions unless they surrender to Krishna. So we want to stop the war in Syria. We want to help in our little way, just like the little sparrow laid her eggs at the shore of the ocean, and the ocean came and took the sparrow's eggs away. And she threatened the ocean, give me back the eggs, or I'm going to dry you up. The ocean laughed at the little sparrow and said, get lost, kid. And so the little sparrow started to take one drop out of the ocean at a time and bring it to the land. And everyone laughed at the sparrow for her impossible determination. But news reached Garuda of his sister bird's plight, and he came on behalf of the little sparrow and threatened to dry up the ocean. So the ocean became afraid of Garuda's threat and gave back the eggs. And as Prabhupada writes, the moral of the story is that God helps those who help themselves. If we try to act as an instrument for Krishna, find out what Krishna wants us to do, and even it may be to offer a ghee lamp or wash a dish, whatever. If it's done for Krishna, then we're actually helping to solve people's problems, and the most important problem person we're solving the problems of is ourselves. We're actually doing something for the benefit of humanity by manifesting devotional life in this material world. By even one little spark in darkness can illuminate the darkness. Acting as an instrument for Krishna brings or manifests the spiritual energy in this materialistic world. And that's what we can do. Of course, if we become powerful like Prabhupada by surrender to Krishna, if you put the iron in the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it acts like fire. It one by one's determination and desire becomes fixed in Krishna's service, desiring to please Krishna, then one becomes spiritualized, and Krishna can utilize one like fire. And so many living entities can be benefited. Therefore, simply our making the right choice, agreeing to be acted as Krishna's instrument, is the solution to our problem, and if we want to help anyone else. On the other hand, we shouldn't become proud. Now I'm desiring to act as Krishna's instrument because of my strong desire I'm saving so many living entities. everyone is pleased with me because I'm so nice, I'm so desiring so nicely. Now I want you to understand that only by the mercy of Krishna's representatives in disciplic succession, not only my initiating guru, but all the instructing gurus, all the devotees who are helping me, only by their mercy am I able to maintain my desire in Krishna's service. Only by remaining humble servant of Krishna's servants am I able to maintain my desire to serve Krishna. Even Srimati Radharani is humbly desiring to please Krishna. She's not thinking, I'm on the top and no one's going to get where I am. I'm eternally on the top. Everyone should just bow down before me, and by my mercy they can become Krishna conscious. No, Srimati Radharani is thinking, I'm simply the most lowly servant of all the servants of Krishna, and by their mercy, the gopis' mercy, Mother Jasoda's mercy, maybe I can do something to try to please Krishna. So if she's thinking like that, what to speak of ourselves, that what do I need anyone? I'm such an exalted devotee. I'm doing such nice service. Everyone should praise me for their benefit, and I can give them blessings, and that way they'll go back. They'll make some spiritual advancement. As soon as we think like that, we think we're better than Srimati Radharani and probably Krishna too. Then our advance in spiritual life is going to be very slow. But if we take the right attitude, simply think ourselves to be an instrument for the previous acharyas, then we might do something good for ourselves and something good for others too. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Khwala. Pitanya. What's that? Prashanya. 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 Yes.
Yeah, regarding the workbook, Srila Prabhupada mentions so-called incarnations or call themselves Bhagavan. And I was thinking about how to preach to Sai Baba followers. Should we be just direct and say he's a bogus rascal, and or should we just say some nice words and try to give them a book?
Well, if you can sell them a book, that's nice. One time I was in the Los Angeles in the garden with Srila Prabhupada, and Karandabhu told Prabhupada that Guru Maharaj's followers had come to us and told us and invited us, the devotees of the temple, to go out to meet Guru Maharaj, supposed incarnation of Krishna, at the airport. So Prabhupada said, you should go out there and you should kick him in the face with shoot boots on. Of course, we didn't do that. Later on, someone did take a pie when he arrived at some airport, took a pie and smeared it into his face, as close as we came to. It wasn't a devotee, by the way. But what to do? You have to, if you can sell them a book, so much the better. But we should, we're nice to people, generally speaking, and we avoid them, because they will just waste our time. We argue with them, we'll waste our time because we're not going to be able to convince them. We'll agitate them and our minds will become agitated. But if we can sell them a book, that's really defeating them. But sometimes there's different possibilities. Sometimes there may be other people who are innocent and we may be challenged by such persons and we might defeat them for the sake of, so other innocent people may hear the proper explanation. We have to judge things according to time, place, and audience. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande Haribol.